Today on Wings, UN Women versus Gender Violence.
If I could have one wish granted, it might well be a total end to rape and to all forms of violence against women.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings. There's
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
November 25th through December 10th are known around the world as the annual 16 Days Against Gender Violence. Phumzile Mlambo Ngcuka from South Africa is an Undersecretary General of the United Nations and the Executive Director of UN Women. Here is the statement she released for November 25th, the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women.
If I could have one wish granted, it might well be a total end to rape and to all forms of violence against women. Rape isn't an isolated brief act. It has life-changing effects. A pregnancy or a sexually transmitted disease, immense trauma and unwarranted sense of shame. In both conflict and in peacetime, it often shapes women's decision to move from their communities through fear of attack or the stigmatization of survivors. Although it is so pervasive, it is underreported for many reasons. In many countries, women know that they are overwhelmingly more likely to be blamed than believed when they report sexual assault. They are likely to be poorly treated by law enforcement, humiliated, and treated like the problem, and in some cases, even disowned by their families, while the lives of perpetrators go on. Positive steps include increasing accountability by making rape universally illegal and holding rapists to account. Strengthening the capacity of law enforcement officials to investigate these crimes, ending all harmful cultural practices, and eliminating homophobia, increasing the number of women in police forces, putting the victim at the center of response, and supporting survivors with access to all legal aid and essential services. Those who use rape as weapon know just how powerful it traumatizes women and how it suppresses their agency and voice. This is an intolerable cost to all women and to society. No further generations must struggle to cope with a legacy of violation. Rape has to end now. And we all must join the fight. We are Generation Equality, and we will end rape. Join us.
That was the statement of Executive Director of UN Women, Phumzile Mlambo Ngcuka, for the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women. That day, November 25th, is the first of the annual 16 Days Against Gender Violence, which end with World Human Rights Day on December 10th. Also during the 16 days, UN Women released episode 1 of its new podcast series, Generations Talk Gender. Here are excerpts from that podcast.
You're listening to this podcast at quite a big moment. UN Women has just launched a new global campaign. It's called Generation Equality, and it marks 25 years since the Beijing Declaration and Platform for Action, the most visionary agenda for the rights of women and girls everywhere.
Podcast host, Katie Lee.
Before we meet today's guests, I just want to run you through a couple of stark statistics. Even before the COVID-19 pandemic began, around the world, one in three women experienced physical or sexual violence, in most cases by an intimate partner. And that has only got worse since the pandemic began. We know from emerging data and reports from those on the front lines that all types of violence against women and girls has intensified. It is a shadow pandemic, and we need a global collective effort to stop it.
People have still yet to acknowledge that women and girls' rights and issues are a crisis that has engulfed our entire world.
Sofia Scarlat is a 17-year-old activist from Romania with a particular focus on youth engagement and the prevention of gender-based violence. She is the founder and director of Girl Up Romania, her country's first ever gender equality organisation for teenagers. At Girl Up, Sofia coordinates a team of more than 100 young volunteers who advocate for girls' rights up and down the country. She's also a member of the UN Women Generation Equality Youth Task Force, a Women Deliver Young Leader, and a 2018 International Children's Peace Prize nominee. And if that wasn't enough, she's also a student at Stanford University. Sofia, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honour to be here.
We're also joined today by Lepa Mlađenović, a feminist activist living in Serbia.
We've worked so much in all these years. In every country of the world, women have organised to work against male violence against women, and we still have it, and I would say we really have it even more than before.
Lepa is a longtime member of the lesbian and anti-war movements. She has a huge amount of experience. She was in fact at the Beijing conference in 1995, which led to the Beijing Declaration. As far back as 1990, she co-founded the SOS Helpline for Women Survivors of Violence in Belgrade. And since then, she's worked with many networks, particularly those working to end sexual violence in Europe. She now works as a counsellor with women who are experiencing trauma of sexual violence and lesbophobia. Even though there have been advances, especially when it comes to new laws and regulations, it's very clear that violence against women and girls is a problem that still exists around the world. Lepa, you were in Beijing along with thousands of feminists 25 years ago, and you've been calling for an end to violence against women, advocating for reforms for many, many years. Why do you think the world is still struggling with eliminating violence against women? Why is this still an issue?
We feminists usually say that violence against women is a structural issue, and that means that in patriarchal society, men as a class, as a gender, they have more power over women, and therefore they use this power to be violent. And this violence gives them emotionally the sense of victors, like they're winning something and they are controlling women and women's bodies. And therefore, this gives them emotionally some satisfaction. So it's really a huge issue to deal with because, as you say, we've worked so much in every country of the world. Women have organized to work against male violence against women. And we really have it even more now with this internet society, because that has really enlarged different forms of male violence.
Sofia, when it comes to your generation, how do young women today experience violence?
I think we imagine that a lot more has changed than is actually the case. I think, especially in my country, a lot of things are the same as they were decades ago. We're dealing with domestic violence in similar extents. We're dealing with sexual violence in similar extents. But we're also dealing with some new phenomena which have not been studied as much. For instance, campus sexual assault, which is now a huge problem at universities across the world. We're dealing with online harassment, sexual harassment. We're dealing with revenge pornography. We're dealing with this new push for anti-abortion legislation, which we're seeing especially across Eastern Europe now with what's happening in Poland in particular. We're dealing with women not being taken seriously, not just by law enforcement, but by their own communities. So as to create an environment where girls grow up already knowing that they should not be talking about the violence that they face, it becomes very normalized to the point where you go on your daily commute to school and you're in middle school, right? Let's say you're in like sixth grade and you're already used to street harassment and being whistled at or touched on the subway or on the bus. It's that type of environment that people grow up in and that they keep living with throughout their entire lives, and that becomes so normal. people have still yet to acknowledge that women and girls' rights and issues are a crisis that has engulfed our entire world. And that is very deeply rooted in our culture, in our traditions, in the way that we even interact with people on a day-to-day basis. And so that's the issue that girls are dealing with today is life, and it's society, and it's the way that we interact with the people around us.
And I will just add to this really great everything that you said, and especially that women are not taken seriously and their experience is not believed, especially with sexual violence. Whatever woman says about that she's been raped or that she's been harassed, it's always maybe not. Maybe she's inventing it. Maybe she's lying. Maybe she wanted it. We who work on sexual violence always have to say again and again that we believe women's experience unconditionally.
Let's turn now to the health crisis that has turned all of our lives upside down this year, some more than others. Violence against women and girls was, of course, an issue before the pandemic, but it is clear that COVID-19 has made the problem worse, particularly when it comes to domestic violence, because, of course, so many women have found themselves confined to their homes with their abusers during lockdowns. But, Sophia, I was really interested to hear that when it comes to young women during the pandemic, a lot of the abuse is happening online.
All of the violence that was in women's lives every single day in the real world, face-to-face, had to sort of move onto our computers and our phones as well. And back in March, in my country, we went into a full lockdown. And so everybody moved their lives online. You were working online, you were going to school online. And so we experienced different kinds of violence, of gender-based violence in online mediums as well. The only issue is that with online mediums, nobody was really prepared to handle them. And so that's kind of what we're dealing with now, is the fallout of a world, an online world, in which we have all of these forms of violence and no legislation and no experience in kind of tackling them.
Can you give me a couple of examples of the kind of online abuse we've seen?
Yes, especially with the work that I do and with my organization, something that we saw a lot of was revenge pornography. This was an issue even before the pandemic, but it grew to insane heights. Back in March, we started receiving a lot of messages from girls who were saying that they were in a situation where they were being blackmailed with nude photographs, or where Instagram accounts had been posting their nude photographs, things that they'd shared with ex-boyfriends years ago, different things like that. And then we realized that there were at least a few dozen accounts of this kind across the country. There was one for each major city, and there were dozens upon dozens of girls involved. All of them were underage, some as young as 12. And we were able to track down these accounts to a group chat on Telegram, which had over 30,000 members. And we're sharing this content, hundreds of photos every single day. So that's kind of the issue that we're talking about, is especially with revenge pornography, there is no legislation in Romania to kind of support victims. And so even when they come forward to us, what can we do? We can contact Instagram and we can ask for help, which was the first step. But even in that case, we were told that because of the pandemic, they had limited their staff and they weren't able to moderate their content as well as they were doing before. So a lot of these accounts are still up today, months later. We know that police are part of this system that oppresses women. And when you come forward with this new issue that they are not trained to handle and they have no legislation around, the more nice response they're going to get is a no, but more likely you're going to get laughed at. And so even, you know, as young people kind of going forward with these issues, we have to not just kind of protect ourselves in online mediums, but we also have to educate adults on these new issues, because they don't really understand the context of them, and they also don't understand kind of how they arise. There's a lot of victim blaming involved with revenge pornography, which also needs to be addressed.
And in terms of offline abuse, Lepa, I'm guessing that also includes a rise in domestic violence?
Yeah, the offline is this one that, because of increased nervousness and anxiety, because people can't go on with their own life, then when men have this power, they have this patriarchal green light to behave in this way. And therefore, that's why the number of the women who called the women's centers for any kind of violence, that means partners' violence and physical violence, has also increased. And also in the Balkan countries, sometimes in the beginning it wasn't even increased, and we thought about it because women were so shocked by the whole change of style of life. So they were not even calling the SOS hotlines because they were locked down with men and they didn't have their free space, you know, how and from where to call them on how to contact women's organizations. So in fact, in the beginning, this number of calls even did not rise.
On Wings, you are listening to excerpts from Episode 1 of the UN Women podcast, Generations Talk Gender. The host is Katie Lee, based in Paris, and her guests are 18-year-old Sophia Scarlett from Romania and 66-year-old Lepa Mladenovic from Serbia.
Lepa, what is your all-time favorite feminist movie and book?
I found recently my favorite movie. It was last year's French movie, The Portrait of a Lady in Fire. It's about love story between two women. And the idea is that what is erotic is that women are equal. So equality between women is erotic. And equality between women is exciting. And it is shown in the film that because we are equal, we exchange our roles. There is mutuality, and therefore there is no space for abusing of power. And therefore, if we create a relationship around equality, there is no violence and there is no wars, and equality is sexy.
I love that idea, and it's a beautiful film. I have to agree with you.
So now you go, Sophia.
I don't think these are necessarily my favorites, but they're just things that have really touched me. The first one is 4 months, 3 weeks, and 2 days. It's a Romanian movie about two women who are organizing an illegal abortion during the 80s. Romania had some of the most devastating abortion policies during the communist era under Ceausescu. And so this is a really important movie that I think everybody should watch, especially when talking about reproductive health and rights within the Eastern European region. I'd also say A Room of One's Own by Virginia Woolf, because I read that book when I was very young. And I think it's my most annotated book ever, because there were just so many things in there that stood out to me. And I thought it was amazing. Probably everybody who's around my age should definitely pick that book up, and any other age, but especially if you're a teenager, it's amazing.
And I don't think we heard a book from you, Lepa. What book would you recommend for us?
Yeah, there are so many I couldn't even think, but I can go on with The Room of One's Own because I read it a couple of times. And I can also say that another one, which is my favorite, is the Black lesbian feminist writer Audre Lorde. We have translated in our language Sister Outsider. I read it many times, and it was really crucial for us to understand what does it mean to be a feminist and lesbian and Black and a mother and a poet, and what does it mean having different identities and at the same time fighting for a new world. It's really fantastic. I just adore her.
Sophia, I'm wondering how a rise in active opposition to gender equality and women's rights, it's something that's happening around the world and in Europe and Central Asia in particular. And it poses a serious threat to progress when it comes to human rights and gender equality. I'm wondering how this opposition to women's rights manifests itself, particularly when it comes to violence against women's rights activists. Are young feminists in your network facing threats or violence? And have you faced any threats yourself, I wonder? Or have there been times when you felt unsafe because of the work that you do?
When I started, I didn't know much about the work that I was doing. But the one thing that I did know was that people were going to hate me and everybody who was associated with the project. So one of the main ground rules that we had going into the organization was that none of the members were going to be posted without their consent, that their names were not going to be included, and that generally we were going to try and maintain a very low profile because everybody who's involved is underage. But I'm the face of the organization. You find my name, you find my school, you find my classmates, you find my family. Social media is very, very easy to use as a means of connecting with people and of mobilizing, but it's also very dangerous because, especially for young advocates, it can be a very easy way for people to target you and to threaten you and to try and intimidate you. And so I've gotten throughout the years messages and comments and people kind of reaching out with threats and hate regarding the work that I do. I've never been in a position where I felt unsafe in person, which I've been very thankful to not have that experience. However, it's still a very dangerous kind of situation to be in, especially as young advocates, because we know that there is no protection. And our organization, we're entirely a group of teenagers. We don't have funding. We don't have lawyers to call. So when we go out and we organize a protest, we understand the risks of that movement, and we want to take those risks on. You want to expose yourself to that danger, but how do you do that when you're 15 and you also have no protection? And maybe your parents aren't really supportive of the work that you do, and you have nobody to call if you were to be arrested. And I've had a few of my members who've received letters from the police or who've sort of been intimidated in some ways to not go to protests in the future. But it's only really come to that at this point, and I hope it doesn't go any further. However, the fact that our country and I guess our society is willing to demonize and kind of attack even young people, people as young as like 14 or 15 involved in something as simple as a fight for equality, right? Then I think that's a larger conversation to be had, that we're willing to let people go to those lengths and to kind of dehumanize somebody because they want to fight not just for their rights, but for the rights of people in general.
And Lepa, of course, violence against women's rights activists is probably not a new phenomenon. Have you experienced violence and intimidation yourself in your activism?
Two times. There was once, was in 1995. There were a few of us who were making lesbian graffiti in one of the streets in my neighborhood. And there were three men who came very aggressively to stop us. They broke glasses of me and another one, and they start hitting the other one, and they took me from my jacket, and they said, "You stop talking," because I was asking him, you know, "Who are you? What are you doing here?" And then, you know, like, "You know, who am I?" Because he obviously knew who am I. And then he said, "You stop dirtying my streets with your words. And I can kill you now and put you in this door, behind this door of the nearby house, and nobody would know." So, which really afterwards made me write an essay, Dirty Streets, because, you know, we lesbians are dirtying the streets. And the one other one was in 2001, when what was supposed to be a first pride in Belgrade, but 400 violent men came before us, about half an hour, and there were about 50 of us activists gathered there, just very small number, and they were so aggressive, you won't believe it. I mean, it was huge. So at one point in the beginning, I found myself and another women friend near me. The guys were hitting us with eggs at the beginning, and I remember we were really surprised, and the other one was a joker. So she said, "Oh, eggs are on my face. You know, my mother used to make egg masks. Maybe it's a time for me to start making egg masks." She was trying to make it, you know, so that we can survive this moment.
We wanted to take some time today to look in detail at some strategies that might actually help when it comes to ending violence against women and girls. Some innovative and effective solutions that have actually shown themselves to work on the ground. Sophia, how are young people tackling the issue of violence against women? Can you tell us about some of the strategies that you've used in your own work and ideas that seem to be really effective?
Our main goal going into the organization was education. It's very, very difficult to talk to our parents' generation, to our teachers, to people within our communities who might not really understand the issues that we're dealing with. But with young people, they're a little bit more open. they haven't fully formed all of their kind of ideas about the way that our society works and gender roles and gender norms and all of those things. And so it's easier to have a conversation. And we initially thought that we could just start there with talking to people our own age about violence, sharing our experiences, kind of making it known that these are very common things, despite how stigmatized they are in our country, and how little people actually talk about them. But moving on from that, we really tried to engage young people as much as possible because we understand that we're kind of on our own. And so with limited resources, you know, we've been able to raise donations for shelters for women who have been victims of domestic violence or human trafficking. We've been able to sit down with politicians. We've been able to organize protests to kind of draw attention to these issues that we're dealing with. To just mobilize people to work within their schools and their communities to talk about these things in the first place. Something that I think people don't really understand as much as I hope they would is that nobody is born an advocate, and kind of being an activist, it's not something that you study towards or you need a lot of experience going into it. To be an advocate for something is to simply believe in it and then to talk to other people and to mobilize them to learn more with you and to kind of have that impact within their community. Anybody can do that. I'm not a special person, and nobody is a special person who's like born with these abilities of like mobilizing and motivating people to do things. It's just about caring, and not enough people care, but I do, and I wish more people did. And so I think that's really important, is that my generation, I think, cares a little bit more than the past ones that we've had, at least in my country. So that's the power that we have going into this movement.
Lepa, with your many years of experience, what do you think is ultimately the best solution to address violence against women?
Teach girls disobedience to patriarchal roles. So it's very important that girls are disobedient, that we give our girls from the very early age to self-defense, to any kind of sport, so that the body of girls are wired from the very beginning, and our brains to protect and defend ourselves, because there is no other way. And also raise consciousness, as Sophia said, you know, to organize. I really believe in women organizing and women solidarity in the feminist movement. The women's solidarity has really saved my life all throughout these years. And that's the most precious dimension of my activism, is women's solidarity and organizing in all different and any kind of activities against the male violence and patriarchy.
You heard excerpts from episode 1 of the podcast Generations Talk Gender, hosted by European journalist Katie Lee, with guest Sophia Scarlett from Romania and Lepa Mladenovic from Serbia. The podcast is soliciting suggestions for guests and topics. To find it on the web, search for Generations Talk Gender Podcast. For information about Wings, email wings@wings.org. Recent back editions can be found at wingsradio.org/wordpress, and our daily news feed is at facebook.com/wingsradio. Wings thanks all our supporters, including your local community radio stations, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, whose works can be found through the website gifteconomy.com. That's gift-economy.com. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle Is Cast. I'm Wings series producer Frida Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.